Accession number 8865, roll number 4.
Mr. Tubbs, reel 4. During this period at the camp near Dieppe, did you ever try to get back into frontline service with your battalion?
No, there's no question of it at all. My leg wouldn't allow it.
Did you feel you were performing a valuable role at Dieppe?
Well, I suppose so. Someone had to do it. It was interesting.
During this period, I believe you became involved in court-martials, both prosecuting and defence.
I did.
Could you run through how this originally happened and then describe some of your cases?
Well, the principal thing was drunkenness on my own people. One particularly. And I was asked to defend someone. And I'd never done anything like this before, but I managed to get him off. And after that, I was asked by a lot of people to defend them. And one very interesting case was a Sergeant Major Nichols, a man of 22 stone. Two ships, the SS Mindy and the SS Darrow, collided in Southampton waters. A large number of the South African Native Labour Corps on board were drowned, and he was alleged to have got into a boat, rowed off, and hit anyone with the oar on the head who tried to get in. And he was head up on an extraordinary charge: disgraceful conduct of a cruel kind. He asked me if I'd defend him. I said, "Not no, nearly. I'll get you a barrister." And I got a man named Ox, O-C-H-S, who was a barrister. And he worked so hard, he had a breakdown. There were 24 witnesses for the prosecution, 23 for the defence. And when Ox gave up the ghost, a man named Smith took it on. He said he'd take it on if I acted as his junior. Imagine my horror when the day before the court-martial he went into hospital with DTs and Muggins was left. But I'd never done anything like this before. And normally, if a court-martial lasts a day, it's longer than usual. And this lasted 2 days, another day for the verdict. And anyway, I did the best I could. Fortunately, Smith had left me the questions he was going to ask him, so I was able to read those, more or less. And this went on for 2.5 days, I told you. And he was found not guilty. He had a hell of a party that night, I believe, and never said thank you to me and never asked me to the party.
What was it about your character or which particular ability, would you feel, made you such a good defence?
God alone knows, I don't. I remember a amusing case happened. There were two youngsters who head up from stealing whiskey from the docks. There was only one man giving evidence against them. It was a nasty red cap policeman whom we all loathed, because they used to wait for my men. My men used to go down to Ark at night and drink in cottages there and houses, and when they came out in the frost they'd very often drop down drunk, and we loathed these fellows. And this was one of them, and I thought I'd get him off. I thought it was easy, and the first one was found guilty. And I was horrified. The second one came, and I said, said to the members of the court, I said, this is one man's word against another. And I pointed at this priest, I said, would you trust that man? And the president of the court martial said, Captain Tubbs, you mustn't talk like that. I said, sir, I'm defending man and his life. Here's a nice, clean, young Englishman, and if he's convicted now, he's damned for life as having been put into prison or whatever it is for an offence. And I got him off. When I got outside, the sergeant said, I'm sorry, sir, but you got off the wrong man. Well, some time after that, the APM rang me up.
Well, could you, APM?
APM was the chief of the police there. The APM rang me up and said, Tubbs, will you do me a favour? I said, I'd like to. What is it? Will you defend one of my men who's head up from stealing whiskey from the docks? I said, who is it? He said, so-and-so. I said, no, I'm damned if I will. I'll prosecute him with all the joy in the world. He was convicted. Having done that, I wrote to this lad's Member of Parliament, explained the situation, said, in the circumstances, this one ought to be wiped out and found not guilty. And that's exactly what happened. So about a month after I'd left the army, I had a letter saying that you were pleased to hear that you succeeded in getting this wiped out.
You mentioned that you got involved in this originally, defending some of your own men for drunkenness. Was that a common thing amongst...
No, the ones who have drunkenness, I invariably prosecuted. It was the other cases I was defending. But interesting thing, I had a man, James, who is a perfect example of ingrained discipline. He was always immaculately dressed, his rifle was splendid, polished, clean, and a fine soldier, but he would get drunk. And one night, Sergeant Doran, the Irish from the Scottish regiment, came in and said, I'm just going to bed. He said, sir, it's James. I said, what's the matter with James? He said, he's drunk. I said, nothing unusual about that. He said, no, but he's was sleeping with a woman, and the husband came home, hit him over the head with a bottle, and chucked him out. And he came out without any boots, and a great wound right down his head. I went along, and there he was at the end of the room. He came rushing towards me. And I said, James. He said, it's my major. I wasn't major. He shook hands with me. And I said, well, come along. We went to hospital. And I was in front of him watching him do this. It was a nasty, bloody mess. And I felt a bit sick, so I went to the back. The moment he didn't see me, he landed out like with both hands and hit the two doctors. I came, James! Stop that. After that, there was no trouble at all when I was there, but it was just ingrained discipline.
It sounds like you had a good relationship with the men under your command.
Oh, yes, I had. Oh, yes.
I believe you were promoted to captain at this time.
No, an acting captain, all the time, but the base commandant disliked me so much because he felt that anyone who went to a court martial was automatically guilty. And someone told me about this. Said, go up to see headquarters and see so-and-so. Tell him about it, and he'll get put through. And exactly what he did. But it wasn't the substantive rank was not made substantive until about a month after I'd left the army.
From this base camp, did you hear much about how the war was going?
We knew how it was going because we knew the moment of a push coming on, all the stuff was going up from the dump, up the line. So we knew what was happening.
How did you feel during the German attempt to break through in March 1918?
Well, it's very amusing because we were 80 miles from the line and terrible wind up with the headquarters about it. Quite sure they come through. And that was that. In July, there was a push, and there was a friend of mine there was in the same battalion as my brother. And I went down to the base to see him and said, if anything happens to my brother, do let me know. And I missed him by day, but my brother was killed. Even the Gloucesters. He had a fine war record too.
As the end of the war came, Spanish flu arose. Could you tell me what the effects of Spanish flu were in the unit you commanded?
It was quite amazing. Some of the officers fell down in the mess 48 hours afterwards they were dead. I caught it. I'd been up to see them in the hospital. So obviously I caught it. And my batman, Richardson, I used to call Sonny Jim, put me to bed, gave me about half a glass of hot whiskey, 6 blankets on me, and the moment I batted an eyelid, he gave me some more whiskey, and I was just sweating like a pig, of course. And within 48 hours, I was back at work.
How were you demobilised from now? What happened when the war ended on Armistice Day? What was happening then and following the demobilisation?
We left the camp and the guards took over. And we went into a camp in Dieppe. One day, the guards didn't like this, going up to room a little to the guards, to guard it. And one morning, they mutinied. Refused to come on parade. And my men came on parade.
Do you remember anything else about that incident?
I do. I went to the base commandant and said, look, will you, this is what happened here, will you see my men get demobbed quicker? I think.
Which battalion of the guards was it that mutinied?
It was Cosmopolitan. It wasn't a regiment, it wasn't a battalion of the guards, just the odd people who were down there.
What had they done when they refused? Did they just refuse to leave their barracks or their huts?
Yes. I don't know what happened in the end. I think they were finally made to go. But I took advantage of it and hoped for the best, and I think it worked.
So when were you actually demobilised? What happened when you were demobilised?
Well, I just came home.
And following that, did you ever think of staying in the army?
Oh, Lord, no.
You couldn't with your heart.
No. Oh, Lord, no.
So what did you do?
I went straight back into business. In the family in Gloucestershire.
How had your experiences in the war affected you?
I don't think it affected me very much.
Had you found them valuable?
No, I don't think so. Made me a man.
I believe after the war you met Stokes, the inventor of the Stokes mortar. Could you tell me about your conversation with him?
A Stokes mortar is a simplest possible thing. It has a barrel about 2 foot 6 3 foot long, with a nipple at the bottom. The shell is just dropped down, the nipple explodes the charge, so the shell is sent out. And that's it. They can put them in one after the other. You had two people, one each side of it, one with bonk, pink, out it goes. And I happened after the war to be at a conference where Mr. Stokes was. And I went up to him and said, Mr. Stokes, one thing I cannot understand about the Stokes gun is how in the name of all that's extraordinary did you manage to get it agreed? And he laughed. And he said they turned it down. And I was summoned to the cabinet and showed him the machine, showed him the Stokes gun, and they turned it down. As we came out, Churchill came to me and said, look, I like that. I've been offered so many thousand, given so many thousand pounds by the Maharaja or somewhere or other. I'll spend that on your gun. And he did. Yes. The extraordinary thing about it is, there's no mechanism. It's just simple, perfectly simple job, does a magnificent work.